Dear colleagues and friends, firstly, I would like to thank Sorbonne University and its doctoral school, Concept et Langage, as well as the Senior RS Laboratory, the GEMAS, for the financial assistance they provided in the organization of this conference. And especially Michel Dubois, who will share this morning's session, for his constant support during the past 3 years it took to develop the project of publishing a handbook on methodological individualism. So as not to repeat myself, I will say MI. This book, which has now been completed, has 2 volumes and features almost 60 chapters with contributions from all over the world. I would like to extend my gratitude to everyone for your work towards this major project. The objective is to disseminate true, robust, and updated knowledge about MI, an approach that is both central to social sciences and paradoxically the most misunderstood. The excellence of the contribution should not be underestimated. They will, without a doubt, help to, as I would like to put it, rehabilitate MI as a fundamental approach within social sciences. Indeed, this contribution demonstrates that MI should not be conflated with political or moral individualism. At a time when the term was not yet commonly used, the famous Austrian economist Karl Menger, one of the founding figures, wrote in essence that political individualism has as little in common with the individualistic method in economics as a gunpowder conspiracy as with theoretical chemistry. L'individualisme politique a autant à voir avec la méthodologie individualiste qu'une conspiration sur la poudre avec la chimie théorique. Moreover, Menger also dismissed the accusation of reductionism, or what was then commonly referred to as atomism, a term he always used with an exclamation point. In particular, micro-reductionism assumes that theories that deal with a given whole can be replaced by theories that deal with its part, the part being conceived with characteristics independent from their belonging to the whole. Menger explained, in essence, as Max Weber would also later underscore, that an atom in physics is not an isolated element. Rather, it is an element of a theoretical system that defines what it is, how it functions, and how it interacts with other elements. Advocating for a better understanding of MI within our scientific community, in my view, would enable the social sciences to reassess their foundation. It could also put an end to future debates attacking straw men, paving the way for meaningful discussion on further progress. The case of economics is somewhat distinct, yet here too, a deeper interpretation of MI is more likely to address the logical problems Olivier Favreau will discuss tomorrow. Let me say that it is a great pleasure to welcome you here to this venerable amphitheater within an even more venerable university. The historical development of this institution, linked with that of the University of Paris, is brilliantly elucidated by Émile Durkheim in his work, The Evolution of Educational Thought in France, L'évolution pédagogique en France. I reference Durkheim here because he explains this emergence using the very terms of MI. This gives me the opportunity to introduce MI quickly. Indeed, Durkheim demonstrates how, at various points in the evolution of the education system, changes in macro-social conditions impact the educational aspirations and needs of social actors, and how these actors react, dare I say rationally, to these changes. This rationality is of course situated and mainly involves the actor's subjective understanding. As Wolf Verhaen will explain in a moment, along with Max Weber. Thus, Durkheim shows how the University of Paris was born of the combination of the action of all individuals and of noun in particular. That is, as a non-intentional effect par excellence. As you know, MI is particularly interested in such effects as these offer enigmas to sociologists. Among these macro-social conditions, Durkheim cites the effervescence of the 11th century, the multiplication of students, their geographic mobility even before Erasmus, and their concentration in school groups attached to churches or monasteries. He also notes the establishment of the Capuchin monarchy in Paris at the beginning of the 12th century, which consecrated the École of Paris, dependent of Notre Dame, as the main institution for teaching. Durkheim further underscores the importance of the presence in Paris of a master of an immense renown, Abélard. The prestige of Paris in Europe and the influx of students led to the creation of schools in private homes, and as a consequence, it led to the relative emancipation of students and teachers from ecclesiastical control. This relative emancipation was institutionalized through the formation of teachers' guilds. The Latin term, universitas, did not originally denote a collective educational establishment, nor did it represent the universality of human teaching disciplines. Instead, it was borrowed from legal terminology and was synonymous with societas. The same was true for the word collegium. Therefore, Durkheim explains that the university did not begin as a center of study, but as a social group, the Teachers' Guild. In this regard, it emerged as a unintentional effect of individual action. I think that the most interesting part of Durkheim's reasoning is not here, because he rejects the idea that such an institution could emerge totally unintentionally. Could the University of Paris, which had such a profound influence on subsequent times and across all of Europe, be only the result of fleeting local causes without any logical connection to the effects they produced? Durkheim's answer is no. There must be something else at play, a form of convergence of the individual aspirations capable of sustaining this emergence. But far from assuming a form of collective force that would compel individual actions, Durkheim posits that this connection operates between the individual's aspiration and their joint effect. He attributes the emergence of the university to something that comes under the rational dimension of actions, that is, meaning. In this case, it is the concept of education, the meaning that actors could ascribe to it, but surely without a clear conscience. Therefore, according to Durkheim, the emergence of the university was not, to some extent, was to some extent a united phenomenon of rational action, but also to another extent, it was the result of underlying rational intentions of the protagonist. Metaconscious, as Raymond Boudon would have put it. In this case, a moral aspiration ascribed to intellectual education that led to the need to join teachings. This metaconscious idea, as he explains, is a legacy of Christianity. According to this idea, the purpose of education is not to develop this or that particular skill, but to shape the mind as a whole. Therefore, it is no exaggeration to assert that Durkheim's analysis, which he delivered as a class taught at the Sorbonne at the dawn of the previous century, potentially even in this very location, focuses on the broad, abstract meaning that drives individual action and aligns with the individualistic method. Now, I wish to dedicate this conference in particular to Raymond Boudon, who worked so much to develop and promote the understanding of MI. Additionally, I dedicate this conference to those who have left us before they could witness the completion of this collective work. Joseph Agassi, who kept his vibrancy even at 96. Jan Jarvis, who regretted not being able to join us today due to illness. Robert Leroux, who left us abruptly. I also hold a special thought for my friend Sylvie Mesure, who authored a beautiful article on axiological rationality and Boudon's concept of dignity. For those who couldn't be present today, the lectures will be recorded and made available on the JMS website. I would also like to extend apologies on behalf of Francesco, who was unable to join us today, due in part to the recent birth of his son. Before I hand over to Wolf Fuhrmann, who will be speaking on a pivotal topic, Max Weber's understanding approach, I would like to draw your attention to his recent publication of a very interesting book on Max Weber's thought in social science methodology, Qu'est-ce que les sciences de la culture? Thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Nathalie. Hello, everybody. My name is Michel Dubois. I'm the director of GEMAS, so I'm directing the lab, the sociology lab, once founded by Raymond Boudon 50 years ago. And it's my pleasure to be here today, and I will be chairing this first session on MI foundations. Thank you, Nathalie, for setting up this event, this beautiful event, in this beautiful place. I think we have four speakers this morning, and it means that we should try to... I will be the keeper of the time, so I'll be the one annoying you and stressing you just to be in time. I think we need to be finished around 12:30, if I'm correct, so we have a lot of time. Maybe we could have 20-25 minutes for each speaker and then keep 5 minutes for the discussion, 5 to 10 minutes, and I'll try to keep everything on track. So, happy to be here today, this morning with you. I see a lot of familiar figures on faces, so it's nice. Come, welcome.